We admire people who show a lot of passion for the things that they do. The radio shows where the personalities that are involved in it are really passionate about their topic. TV shows that people are defending their particular view, those are popular ones. And in religion as well, people are drawn to groups that display rich emotions. Some of the ones that grow rapidly are those that are very passionate in the things that they display and the things that they say and do. And passion is a wonderful thing if it's directed in the right way and in the right fashion. Over in John chapter 2, there we go. John chapter 2, and in verse 13. John chapter 2, starting with verse 13, it says, "The Passover of the Jews was near, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And he found in the temple those who were selling oxen and sheep and doves, and the money changers seated at their tables. And he made a scourge of cords and drove them all out of the temple with the sheep and the oxen. And he poured out the coins of the money changers and overturned their tables. And he said to those who were selling the doves, he said, 'Take these things away. Stop making my Father's house a place of business.' His disciples remembered that it was written, 'Zeal for your house will consume me.'" Jesus was passionate about the fact that God's house was a place of worship, not business. He made it plain. He made it known. People picked up on it real quick. But the thing that we have to understand is too often people pick up passion. They seek out passion for its own sake, and never consider about the direction of which it goes. In the heat of the passion, they don't stop to inquire, are they headed in the right direction? In our scripture reading, we read from Hosea chapter 10. And I'd like to back up for just for a moment back to Hosea chapter 6. Thought about this because our Tuesday night lesson, we were studying through Hosea. And in chapter 6, verse 1, it says, "Come, let us return to the Lord. For he has torn us, but he will heal us. He has wounded us, but he will bandage us. He will revive us after 2 days. He will raise us up on the third day, that we may live before him. So let us know, let us press on to know the Lord. His going forth is as certain as the dawn. He will come to us like the rain, like the spring rain watering the earth." And when you read that, you say, okay, the Jews have finally got it. They're calling out, we need to get back to God. We need to follow God. We need to reach out to him. Until you read the next verse, verse 4. "What will I do? Shall I do with you, O Ephraim? What shall I do with you, O Judah? For your loyalty is like a morning cloud, and like the dew that goes away early." They got some passion, God says, but it's not going to last. It's going to disappear. It's all shallow. It's all show. What he's saying is, you don't really mean it. You talk that you want to follow after me, but you really don't. And that's what we see in chapter 7. In Israel, evil deeds were rampant. In verse 2 of chapter 7, "They do not consider in their hearts that I remember all their wickedness. Now their deeds are all around them. They are before my face." God sees what they're doing. People tend to see God as an extension of themselves. A lot of people think, well, if other people aren't paying attention, then nobody else is paying attention. When God doesn't act immediately, they believe God doesn't notice. When the punishment doesn't arrive right after I did some type of sin, well, they believe that God will forget. There is forgetfulness, but it's not on the part of God. Take a look at Isaiah chapter 1. Isaiah chapter 1. And starting with verse 2. Listen, O heavens, and hear, O earth, for the Lord speaks. Sons I have reared and brought up, but they have revolted against me. An ox knows his owner, and a donkey his master's manger. But Israel does not know. My people do not understand. Israel forgot God, but God has not forgotten their sins. And what they did not understand was that their actions were leading them to a punishment that was beyond what they could comprehend. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, it was prophesied that this would happen. In Deuteronomy 32 and verse 28, for they are a nation lacking in counsel, and there is no understanding in them. Would that they would be were wise, that they understood this, that they would discern their future. That was Moses' prayer. Oh, if Israel just understood the direction in which they were going. Then it would make some corrections. Then they would change. But they didn't. See, their leaders love pleasure. In verse 3 of chapter 7 of Hosea. If you haven't figured out, we were going to keep going back to Hosea quite a bit. So put your bookmarker there. With their wickedness, they make the king glad. And the princes with their lies. Now, this sometimes reminds me of some business leaders I've run across in my years. People who are so focused on getting a profit that they're willing to overlook lying. They're willing to overlook cheating on their sales staff just as long as the profits are up. That's what he's saying here. They have kings, they have leaders, princes, people among Israel. They don't care what people are actually doing so long as they get what they want out of it. They don't care how much wickedness is in the country. They don't care about how much lying is going on. They don't care about the morality of the people so long as their goals are being met. See, some leaders want to hear what they expect, even if it is a lie. I've run across that too. Bosses in works, I've seen it in countries as well. They have an expectation and it doesn't matter. They want to hear what they want to hear, what they expect to hear. There's a good example of this in 1 Kings chapter 22. Ahab, the king of Israel, the one that Hosea is prophesying about that country, though Ahab has died by the time Hosea is actually being written. Ahab planned an attack to the country north of them, to Damascus. And he asked for some prophets to tell him whether he would be successful. And the prophets knew this, and they told him exactly what he wanted to hear. In 1 Kings 22 and verse 6, then a king of Israel gathered the prophets together, about 400 men, and said to them, shall I go against Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall I refrain? And they said, go up, for the Lord has given it into the hands of the king. They told him exactly what he wanted to hear. Should I go up? Go up. God's going to give it to you. Actually, if you read what they said, they were very clever in how they worded it. They didn't say which king. They said, God has given it into the hands of the king. What, the battle? The city? Which king? So no matter which way this battle goes, these prophets could say, I was right. But it was exactly what Ahab wanted to hear. But the problem was he didn't trust it. It was too close to what he wanted to hear. And so down in verse 13, he sends for a prophet of God. And when he sends for them, the prophet is warned, now you tell Ahab exactly what he wants to hear. Verse 13 of chapter 22. Then the messengers went and summoned Micaiah, spoke to him, saying, "Behold, now the words of the prophets are uniformly favorable to the king. Please let the words be like the words of one of them and speak favorably." So Micaiah was told, "We want you here and we want you to say exactly what the other prophets said." Because everybody, all 400 of them said the same thing. It's a consensus. "We want you to say exactly the same thing." See, God knew he preferred a lie. Micaiah did tell him the same thing because it meant anything you want it to mean. And they have got all mad about it. And so Micaiah told him exactly the way things were going to be. In fact, Micaiah even told him why it came out this way. See, God knew he preferred a lie. In verse 20, so the Lord said, "Who will entice Ahab to go up and fall at Ramoth-Gilead?" And one said this, while another said that. Then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord and said, "I will entice him." The Lord said to him, "How?" And he said, "I will go and be like a deceiving spirit in the mouth of all his prophets." And then he said, "You are to entice him and also prevail. Go and do so." Micaiah even tells Ahab, "Here's the plot that the Lord had. He knew you wanted to hear exactly this thing. And so he knew you would swallow it. You wanted to hear that you're going to win no matter what. So that's what you were told." And even when Ahab was told the truth, you know what he did? He had Micaiah put in prison. He went to battle anyway. In chapter 22, verse 26, and the king of Israel said, "Take Micaiah and return him to Ammon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, 'Thus says the king, put this man in prison and feed him sparingly with bread and water until I return safely.' Micaiah said, 'If you indeed return safely, the Lord has not spoken by me.' And he said, 'Listen, all you people.'" And Ahab did not return safely. Even when in disguise, he still got killed by a chance arrow that just hit him in the right spot. You see, people want to hear what they want to hear, including leaders. And this is one of the problems Israel had. They had leaders that didn't care what the truth was. They only wanted to hear what they wanted to hear. They didn't care what the morality of the nation was. They only cared about what the expectations they wanted to get. But those who give approval to sins are condemned along with those who commit the deeds. When leaders promote immorality, it doesn't matter whether they are involved in it or not, the promotion of it means that they are going to be punished along with those who do it. In Romans chapter 1, starting with verse 32, "And although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them." They are worthy of death, those who commit crimes. But God says it's also worthy of those who approve of those same crimes. And so Hosea begins a comparison of Israel to an oven, a baker's oven. And in verse 4 he says, "They are all adulterers, like an oven heated up by the baker, who ceases to stir up the fire from the kneading of the dough until it is leavened." We have a baker who's got a big clay oven, fills it up with wood, stirs it up, gets it going really good, and then closes it down. And goes off to get the bread ready. And meanwhile, the oven's getting hotter and hotter. And what Hosea is saying is that they were getting heated up Israel was getting heated up by their sexual sins. Reminds me of Thyatira in Revelation chapter 2. Revelation chapter 2 and in verse 19. I know your deeds and your love and faith and service and perseverance, that your deeds of late are greater than at first. But I have this against you, that you tolerate the woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess, and she teaches and leads my bondservants astray, so they commit acts of immorality and eat sacred things, sacrifice idols. Notice, I know your deeds. They sound like good deeds. Faith and other things are being accomplished. He says they're even greater than they were at the beginning. You're doing more. But sin is in the midst of the church. Immorality had crept in. There's a fire building. It's going to consume if you don't watch out. In Hosea chapter 7 and verse 5, Hosea 7 verse 5, and on the day our kings and princes became sick with the heat of wine, he stretched out his hand with the scoffers. Alcohol and other drugs, they remove inhibitions. You feel that you can do as you please. More fuel is being added to the fire. And then in verse 6, for the heart is like an oven as they approach their plotting. Their anger smolders at night. In the morning it burns like a flaming fire. They smoldered as they laid plans, all the plots that they have. And people plot how to do evil. In Micah chapter 2, Micah chapter 2, and in verse 1, woe to those who scheme iniquity, who work out evil and on their beds. When morning comes, they do it, for it is in the power of their hands. They covet fields and then seize them, and houses and take them away. They rob a man in his house, a man in his inheritance. Israel was a land where people were just plotting how they could do evil to other people, thinking about it, then carry it out. You know, some people just can't sleep well unless they make somebody else miserable. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4, starting with verse 14. Do not enter the path of the wicked, and do not proceed in the way of the evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they cannot sleep unless they do evil, and they are robbed of sleep unless they make someone else stumble. That's the way a lot of people are. There are people like that in the world who just live for wickedness. Israel had become that type of nation. The comparison that Hosea is bringing is like an oven that's been fully loaded, but it was closed down too soon. So the heat's building in it and getting hotter and hotter, but still gassing out. And you open the oven door suddenly and all that air just rushes in and you get an explosion of flame. That's what Israel was like. It was building, it was smoldering, and the door's about to be open and it's going to explode. In Hosea chapter 7, and in verse 8, it says, Ephraim mixes himself with the nations. Ephraim has become a cake not turned, which will explain why there is a half-baked pancake on the screen. Because that's what he's talking about. Ephraim started out as mixing with nations. They weren't satisfied being God's people. They sought out other nations and the ways of other people. It was never enough just to be what God wanted. Take a look at Psalms chapter 106. Psalms 106 and verse 34. They did not destroy the peoples as the Lord commanded them, but they mingled with the nations and learned their practices and served their idols, which became a snare to them. They even sacrificed their sons and their daughters to demons and shed innocent blood, blood of their sons and their daughters, whom they sacrificed to the idols of Canaan, the land that was polluted with blood, and thus become unclean in their practices and played the harlot in their deeds. It was never enough just to be God's people. They had to bring in other practices, corrupt practices, things that we would look at and say, oh, these are awful. But I want you to think, people do that today. It's never enough to be God's people. We got to bring in what the denominations are doing. We got to bring in other things. And we never look at it and say, is this right? It's just new, it's exciting. And the result was their own destruction. Going back to verse 7 of Hosea chapter 7. All of them are hot like an oven. They consume their rulers. All their kings are fallen. None of them calls them. There's lots of zeal. There's lots of passion. But they're consumed by their passion. I want you to just take a look at 2 Kings chapter 15. Just to get you an idea of what happened in Israel. If you start reading the successions of the kings, in chapter 15, verse 8, after the 38th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Zechariah, the son of Jeroboam, became king over Israel in Samaria for 6 months. Then we get down to verse 10. Then Shulam, the son of Jabesh, conspired against him and struck him before the people and killed him and reigned in his place. Down in verse 13, Shulam, the son of Jabesh, became king in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah, and he reigned 1 month in Samaria. And then verse 23, then the 50th year of Azariah, the king of Judah, Pekahiah, son of Mahaim, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 2 years. And now in verse 25, then Micaiah, son of Remaliah, his officer, conspired against him and struck him in Samaria in the castle of the king's house with Ergob and Ariah. And with him were 50 men of the Gideonites, and he killed him and became king in his place. Down in verse 27, in the 52nd year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekah, the son of Remaliah, became king over Israel and reigned 20 years. At least he lasted a little longer than most. Then verse 30. And Hosea, the son of Elah, made a conspiracy against Pekah, the son of Remaliah, and struck him and put him to death and became king in his place in the 20th year. It's one king after another king after another king. Some of them only last mere months, at that much. One commits assassination, becomes king in a place, who then is in turn assassinated, and somebody else takes his kingship from him. Kings are murdered. The murderers become kings. Violence brings violence. This is the type of life that Hosea was predicting. There's a lot of passion here. A lot of violence and murder. Hosea says they're like a pancake that you put on too hot of a griddle. Real quickly, you got it burnt on one side and it's uncooked on the other. And you got a totally unappetizing mess on your hand. See, they didn't look for God for aid. They looked for other nations to save them. And there was no being saved by those other nations. See, in their pride, they thought they could solve their own problems. Take a look at Hosea chapter 7, starting with verse 9. Strangers devour his strength, yet he does not know it. Gray hairs also are sprinkled on him, yet he does not know it. Though the pride of Israel testifies against him, yet they have not returned to the Lord their God, nor have they sought him for all of this. They're like a guy who's getting old, doesn't realize his strength is fading. Still thinks he can do just the same things he did back when he was 20. And somehow it doesn't work. He doesn't realize that all these treaties and all these deals that he's making are not going to support Israel. In fact, they're going to lead to Israel's downfall. Now, when going through all of this, what does it mean for you and I? Zeal that is not directed towards God is not good. It never is. Zeal becomes a fire without control and ends up consuming and destroying. See, so many people measure churches by the emotions invoked without looking about the obedience that they have to God. If you ask what is attractive about Group X, then you'll hear about, well, they're so fired up for God. Well, yes. But then you ask, well, what do they do? What do they accomplish? And very soon you find out that all their practices have nothing to do with what God asks for. They're not obedient to God. They're fired up. But not in the direction which God says needs to be gone. And you get a lament, much like what Paul said in Romans chapter 10 about the Jews in his day. Romans chapter 10, and starting with verse 1. Brethren, my heart's desire, my prayer to God for them is for their salvation. For I testify about them that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For not knowing about God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own, they did not subject themselves to the righteousness of God. These people were zealous for God, but they didn't do it according to God's knowledge. They had lots of fire, but it wasn't directed to a purpose that God wanted. You see, zeal is not the goal. So many people look at the denominations, look at all the fun that they're having. And then they bring the ideas and practices in, never stopping to think, well, would God approve of this? They start intermingling, like the Israelites did. We're all Christians, we're just serving in different ways. And just like ancient Israel intermixed with the nations around them, so churches dilute themselves with denominations. And just as Israel destroyed itself by doing so, so has churches. We too can become half-baked, overdoing and underdoing God's will at the same time. And the result is an unappetizing mess that has nothing to do with what God intended. So we need to be careful of those who put their emphasis on the fire and don't think about the product they're trying to produce. Hope you'll think about these things this day. We'd like to offer an opportunity. If there's anyone here tonight or today who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. If there's anyone here who is a child of God, would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song selected.